You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tedford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniac.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock, you know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
On today's episode, Stephen and Courtney have Jack Lander on the podcast. He is known as Golden Rosie Outdoors. They talk about everything from his past hunting experiences, sports growing up, success and failures, how fitness has helped and hindered his ability to reach his goals. Jack also shares an epic story of his bull elk hunt from 2017. Jack, you know, includes some of his passions for helping others and his ability to reach out into the community and be a part with so much added positivity, which obviously so many people need. So sit back, relax, and get ready to enjoy Full Draw Fitness with Courtney and Steven and Jack Lander.
Welcome back, Archery Maniacs, to Full Draw Fitness. Steven and Courtney here from Elevation Fitness Training. We're getting this thing fired up today, and we have a pretty special guest, one of our dear friends, fellow outdoorsman, funny guy, actually master turkey and cow caller, and I don't mean elk. Jack Lander with us, also known as Golden Rosie Outdoors. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. It's a lovely
Friday.
Day.
We're it recording is. On a Friday, so
Friday for Wednesday.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
It's a good day.
What's happening with you today, buddy?
Just slept in. Hanging out for couple hours with you guys, and then headed into work, and then tonight I'm gonna take my wife on a date up in Portland.
All right.
So. Awesome. Nice. Like a getting dressed up kind of date, or what you guys have planned?
Yeah, I'll dress up. I'll put a polo on or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. Now, does she know about this yet, or is it gonna be a surprise?
It was half her idea, so.
Oh, awesome. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Very cool.
Well, that's good. We'll give you at least 50% credit then. That's fair.
Yeah. She's like, so what are you doing on Friday? I said, I don't know why. She's like, I'm waiting for you to ask me on a date. I was like, oh, you want to go on a date? She's like, yes.
God, I'm so surprised.
Yeah. That's awesome. Very cool.
Cool, man.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, who's Jack Lander? What do you do? What do you like? And where did the name Golden Rosie Outdoors come from?
Okay. Yeah, Jack Lander, currently living in Salem. Oregon. I grew up in Gold Beach, Oregon, so down in the southwest corner. And most people ask me if that's from in California, and I tell them no, because we're close. But we don't get the sunshine. We just get all the rain. Yeah, so I moved up to Salem to go to school at Corbin. I got my bachelor's degree in psychology, and then I worked at Les Schwab for a couple years and hated it. And decided to go back to school. Well, that was always the plan, but I took a year off when I got married. Went back to school, and then I am about 3 months away from graduating with my master's in counseling.
Wow.
Yeah, so moved in with the in-laws, and they're helping us save a bunch of money. So that's motivation to finish strong so I can get a good job and get out of here.
Heck yeah, man. That's awesome. Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, who am I? Yeah, I don't know. I love to hunt. That's what I grew up doing. And the last couple of years I've had a lot of learning experiences and listened to a lot of podcasts and stuff. And then I thought, you know what? Like, I've always talked about wanting to be a photographer or like filming my hunts because of guys like Angry Spike or the Bro Crew. And I was like, well, where do I start? So I said, I'll just start an Instagram page. And most people you talk to or like you see on Instagram, they just put their last name, and then they throw outdoors on the back of it. And I was like, I want to be creative, but I didn't know what to do. And I thought, okay, what do I love? I said, I love hunting Roosevelts. And I started thinking about Roosevelts, and their coat is like just that golden kind of blonde brown, brown color. And I was like, you know, like that's Golden Rosie. That's not a bad name. And a lot of people call it Rosie, but I just wanted to be accurate in my spelling. Yeah, so that's how I came up with it. I was just sitting at the house one night, and I wanted something that would be kind of unique. Because I'm not the first guy that loves targeting that and wants to share it with people. But I didn't want to be the same as everybody else. So
yeah,
that's a good thing to strive for. Not the same as everybody else.
Yeah, no joke. Could have been Jack Lander Outdoors, man. Come on.
Jack Lander
that's
Outdoors.
That's catchy.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that was my second question that I didn't have written down was, where did Golden Rosie Outdoors come from and why? And I think that's fantastic, man. That's that's good. So I guess I can check that off of what I wanted to my second handle to be. It's gonna be Dark Rosie Outdoors. So don't want to be a copycat. Yeah.
So backing up to this psychology major, what on earth got you so interested in the psyche of other humans?
That's scary.
Yeah. I wanted to join they call it the helping profession. When I was in high school, at first I thought about going into like forestry or something because I love being outside. And then it went from that. I thought about being a youth pastor. But I also wanted to, like, because I love, like, community and connection and working with people. I love working with kids, but I am not a preacher, and I am not good at putting sermons together. And so my neighbor was a counselor, and my parents always mentioned it. And then one day I just sat down with him and talked to him about it. And I was like, you know, they make good money. They help people, and it's a career that I can go into to make a difference, but also provide for my family. And that's kind of been my two biggest goals with it. I started in psychology, and because I don't love, there's parts of it I don't really like. Everybody's always like, oh, you're gonna read my mind, get into my brain.
If it were only that easy.
You're gonna start fires with your thoughts.
Yeah, and so I've learned a lot in this program. My internship's been with kids, so
awesome. Mainly
kindergarten through third grade, and I have realized that I have a big passion for children because they're innocent and they need somebody to fight for them.
Yeah,
heck yeah.
A lot of the kids I work with come from pretty broken homes or abusive backgrounds, so. As I graduate, that's what I'd like to look into, is working with kids in some fashion.
Awesome. Yeah. Wow. That's
huge.
Jeez. Yeah. It's fantastic.
You nailed it right on the head. Like they are innocent and they do need somebody to, you know, be there for them. And that's not typically, or in a lot of cases, you know, their parent or this, you know, whoever's providing for them. So that's a huge job. And I can only imagine that, you know, there are really hard aspects to that. So I thank you for, you know, doing that and considering giving your life to serving other people. That's awesome.
Heck yeah.
Thank you.
Especially a group of folks, you know, adult children or anything, just having an advocate like that is incredible. Yeah. Plus now you're qualified to actually openly judge folks the second you meet them, right? Yeah. So it's not like you can't just be accused of judging people when you're professionally trained to be judgy, which is great. So we obviously need to spend more time together so I can pick up on a couple of those things.
That's good.
You do it, just not professionally.
Yes, that's right. I know, that's what I'm saying. I was speaking of being judged, you know, we wanted to do a podcast and chat with people that we respect and care about, we think are funny, we think we can learn from, and also who put, you know, athleticism and fitness and nutrition and health and you know, all those things together into their hunting, right? Because this is a hunting, yeah. It's you know, full draw fitness. So I think that, you know, with the last 6 months of going through our battles, I say our battles with Courtney's health and all of her stuff, you know, that mental toughness, that mental strength and that mental game has to be there as well. So we thought, man, what a great person to speak to, you know, other than a mental professional, right? So mental health professional.
Still gotta graduate.
Yeah. You're almost there. Back to the humor part of it. Some folks know because of the endless Instagram story post that we made a couple weeks ago about our amazing turkey adventures and how we both were really good at calling in cows. I don't know if maybe you want to share a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so we're hunting deep on the back of someone's property.
It was backcountry for sure.
How do you prepare for a hunt like that?
No. I showed up early too, which was good.
I was like, hey, Steven, you want to hunt turkeys? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, wow, really? Okay. Like, I wasn't expecting that, but sweet. So I've got a place kind of out in this small little community and a few pieces of property that I've had permission to hunt. But these birds get pressured pretty heavily because there's like 12 people that have permission to hunt that place. Anyway, Steven came out and we got within range. I think we were inside of 100 yards of these birds and we're like, okay, this is perfect. We'll call them. They're going to come on in. Steven's like, this works every time. We're in the perfect place. And if it was 99% of turkeys, it would have worked and we'd have killed them. But these birds, I don't think they're normal turkeys.
They were like super turkeys. Hey, when did I show up, by the way, too? We like to be very authentic here.
Okay, so I made sure I got out of bed. I got to the splash. No, I didn't even fall asleep that night. I think my wife and I went out with some friends, and I got home and laid in bed till 2. And I was like, screw it. I'm just going to go out. So I got in the truck. I get to our spot at like 3 o'clock, probably 3:30, and it's starting to get daylight. I'm like, man, Steven said he'd be here, so I call you. You hang up on me. Because I think you thought it was your phone alarm or something. And then you text me back a few minutes later, and you're like, dude, I'm still asleep. I was like, okay. So anyway, so that's about 5:30. I think you probably showed up about 7 o'clock or so.
Man, I was so bummed about that, because that's like one of my favorite, you know, as we talked about, it's one of my favorite parts about hunting is getting up early, making coffee, being the only one moving in the house, you know, very dimly lit place. And it was the first time we got to hunt together, so I was absolutely stoked, and I freaking blew it.
I woke up and I'm like, why is the daylight out and why are you here?
Yeah.
And why does your phone keep going off? Like, what in the heck is going on?
Yep. And you know, the whole time you're up at like 2 a.m. taking nighttime photos, just waiting for your buddy to show up.
Just waiting for the homie.
That's right. So yeah, that was so I get there and we're in the one spot. It's so far back country that we don't even have cell phone service. And so I'm like, where are you, man? And you're like, I'm right over here. And I'm looking around and then I see you. And it's literally like the most perfect turkey hunting environment ever. There's all these kind of big, brushy areas where we can hide. And I didn't know there was that much cattle out there until I snuck back in there, right? So you kind of go back in here and after I find the right place to park. So it started out pretty strong. It was a strong start.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it like probably about 40 minutes after daylight, I had the birds. They're probably within 100 yards. And I had one tom. He's kind of a satellite tom. He just started sprinting towards me and he caught me off guard. And then he stops like 50 yards and he's staring at me. I just couldn't get a shot off. And then as soon as you showed up, everything died. And the birds went to their corner. And
I have that effect.
I was like, man, I was texting you too. I was like, dude, it's going to be good. Like, the birds are fired up. Yeah, you got to me and then everything just stopped.
It was weird. Yeah, I'm like the smelly kid. So when I got out of the rig and I texted you like, okay, you said, you know, go into the certain spot, come back here so many, you know, 100 yards and take a right and then just skirt along the fence line or whatever. When I got out of the rig, every time this goat would blah, it's like blah, 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 and there was birds gobbling everywhere. And I'm like, I'm just going to go where the goats are. We're going to knock down 5 or 6 birds, you know, high five each other, drink some coffee, and we're going to go home. And that is not how it went down at all.
We called in some cows. I tried to slap one on the butt, and then it about pooped on me.
It almost pooped on you, yeah, which was, I think, was probably the most epic part of the whole day. So we're behind this bush, and we set the decoy out. And I'm like, we're just going to kind of skyline that decoy a little bit, and it's going to work flawlessly, right? We got the call out. Quack, 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 quack. We're calling these birds, and everything's going to work perfect, except for they don't care. They don't care about anything we're doing, right? So then we're like, well, we're in a great spot. The weather's perfect. You know, there's this one little calf that was kind of a cute little interested in what we're doing. So we figured any attention is good attention. So we started kind of paying attention to those guys. And then all of a sudden, they start harassing the decoy. They literally start coming over and start spinning it around and bluff charging it and trying to stomp our turkey decoy into the ground. So, yeah.
Stupid.
So I'm not sure how Jack is the cow whisperer, and he actually got him right. Every time we would turn around and face the turkeys, these cows would come in about 20 more yards, and we'd turn around, they'd stop. And then we'd turn around, we'd start to make a move on the turkeys, and the cattle would come even closer until they're basically sniffing our packs. They're all around us, and every time you turn around, there's 5 more. So now there's a dozen cows behind us. Jack's chasing one of them around this bush, trying to see how close he can get to it. So we were very focused, which is good.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So anyway, like it. Let's talk more about one of your successful hunts. And my bad for, I don't know how I slept through. I forgot to turn my weekend alarm on. So anyway.
Oh, it was all good. It was all good.
Now that we're past that, you had a pretty awesome elk hunt this last year. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was really fortunate. My cousin missed a great bull, and I was able to kill it that night. it was a cool year. Because I've been working in the school district, the last few years I've always taken the first week off because it's about the only extended amount of time I can get aside from weekends. And 4 of us biked in to our camp. We're just hunting the Coast Range. So we hunt a lot of logging country. So we'll park at the gate and then take our mountain bikes and trailers in for a few days. And we had some action, well, a little bit of action. We saw a decent 5-point on opening day. He's about 100 yards from us. But we just couldn't seal the deal on him. And then covered quite a bit of country. And 3 days in, 2 of our buddies had to go back to work. So they biked out and went back to camp. And it was pretty hot out, so I was getting pretty dehydrated. And so I was like, hey, Selmer, let's go back towards camp, and we'll hang out there, and we'll just glass. We'll glass some clear cuts and see if anything pops out. So I was feeling pretty sick. And so we glass this one cut for probably a half hour or so. I was trying to drink as much water as I could. Started feeling a little better. And saw some deer. And then it's getting close to dark. So we're up on top of this knob. So we walked around to the other side. Took a glass kind of this valley. And about 2 minutes in, Selmer's like, he spots something walking down the road. It's probably a good 2 miles out, maybe a mile and a half, something like that. And at first he thought it was a hunter because it was walking down the road. But then he pulled his binos up and he's like, Jack, that's a bull. And I was like, really? You can see horns? He's like, yeah. So he helped me find it. I got my glass on it for like 2 seconds and watched its butt disappear into the timber. And I said, Selmer, if you saw horns from here, that's a big bull. Because I said, when I see a branch bull 500 yards out, I usually think it's a spike. So I was like, okay, this is good. So we went to camp, hung out for the evening, woke up in the morning and packed everything up. In our plan, we were just going to hunt our way back to the truck because where we were at was pretty dead. And so we went down, and this was in the swamp where this bull is kind of walking down into. And there's roads that kind of hug the outside edge of it. So we walked down onto one of those spur roads, and it was like 4 days in. So still pretty early. That bull was by himself, so I was like, well, if he's looking for cows, we'll cow call for a bit instead of bugling, because I didn't know if bugling would work or not. And so we cow call for maybe a minute or two, and then sure enough, that bull pipes off, just lets out a big old bugle, and we got super excited. And so we ran down the road, cow call some more, and that bull's like half the distance to us. And I was like, Selmer, we got to get set up real quick, because that bull, he's coming in a pot. So Selmer set up about 10 yards in front of me, and we're sitting just on the inside of these firs, right on the edge of the road. And this is the first year I started trying to film, too. So I set the camera up on the tripod, made sure Selmer was in the picture. And then next thing you know, this bull steps out on the road, cracks off this big bugle. And my first thought was, somebody let their horse go, because it was, I mean, his body was huge. So it just blew my mind. And Selmer turns around, his jaw hits the floor, and he looks at me, and then he turns back, and then you can kind of tell he's like, we're both just pumped, but we were both super surprised. And then for the next minute and 45 seconds, that bull slowly walked down the road right to us. So that was pretty cool. We got it all on film. The bull stopped at about 40 yards, and Summer took a shot that it wasn't a great shot, but he missed the bull. And so I was like, okay, shoot. That arrow, you can like play it back in slow motion, and that arrow's about halfway to the bull. And then you see him drop, and he dodges it, jumps right, and that arrow goes right, whizzing right by his head. So it was like,
isn't that crazy? You can walk right up on them in the timber and they don't see you, but they will dodge a projectile that's going 300 feet per second. It's the most amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It blew my mind, because my first impression was, uh-oh, that's not a great shot. It's probably going to be a bad hit. And then a split second later, I'm like, no freaking way. That bull just dodged to zero. It's like Matrix.
It's, yeah. Man, their ability, growing up hunting whitetails, you know, my dad would always tell me, especially does, you have to aim for their brisket if you're in a tree stand, because they're going to drop 16 inches the time they hear your string. And back in the day, my bow at 12 was probably shooting 140 feet per second, you know, maybe. So, and I would all the time, you know, and I've actually shot bucks really low thinking that the same thing, and they never moved. So then you've got this wounded animal that's more than likely going to bleed out that you're not going to find, you know. But it's crazy. We hear all the time, you know, it was like Matrix, right? You draw back, you shoot, and this thing hits the deck. So you ended up finding it again, right?
Yeah. So that bull took off, and then I think I bugled at first. And then we sat there for about 2 minutes, and then Summer started walking down the road. And about 25 yards down, he looks to his left, and there's this little opening. Well, that bull had stopped about 10 yards off the road. So that Summer and that bull are like 15 yards away from each other. They make eye contact, and then the bull just takes off. And so Summer's like, crap. I mean, so he got, it was super close. And then Selmer came back, we talked for a minute, and then we're like, well, let's go after him. So I bugled, and the bull kept bugling the whole time, even though he was working his way back into the swamp. So we took off chasing after him, busted brush, pushing through this nasty, thick, like jack firs. You couldn't hardly see anything. You're getting hit in the face with branches. It's like, dude, this is miserable. And then we got to a point where we couldn't go any further because it was too swampy. We'd had to take a swim pretty much. And the wind started swirling. So I said, hey, we need to back out and we'll come back later this afternoon. And so that's what we did. We were probably we were inside of 200 yards probably from where that bull was bugling still. But we backed out, we rode up the hill, made some phone calls to I was freaking out. Like, I was like, man, this bull's huge. I was like, dude, you'll never believe it. Like, and then we went and just took a break for a while, kind of up in some shade. And again, I was still feeling pretty dehydrated, but I was probably drinking like 6 or 7 liters of water a day. But it was so hot and I sweat so much that it was just flowing right through me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we hung out at this creek, we got some water, and we just chit-chatted for a bit. And then I was like, well, I better eat some food because I'm feeling pretty weak and it's probably going to be a long night. I was hoping it'd be a long night.
Yeah.
So I pounded Mountain House real quick. And then I was like, man, that, I don't know, that's not feeling too good. But I was like, oh, well, I'll be fine. And it's probably about 4:30. And then I was like, well, let's get after it. So we biked back down the hill, right back to the same spot. So we walked down the road, and that bull fired back, and we're like, okay, it's game time. So we took off into the swamp and walked probably 50 to 100 yards and stopped again. Because when you get down in there, everything kind of changes a little bit. So I have no idea where that bull was calling from. Torch off again. He responds. And so we take off to the right, kind of. And about that time, Selmer stops me with excitement because he found this really nice 4-point blacktail shed. And I was like, dude, that's our lucky charm. So we put it on his back and took off after the bull. And so ended up about every 100 yards or so, I'd bugle, he'd respond, and we'd close the distance. And we came inside of about 40 yards. And then I didn't know it at the time, but the bull, he bugles, and then he stands up out of his bed. And he started, I started hearing some brush move. And so I got kind of ready and let out one more bugle. And then, because I thought, oh, hey, if we're this close, that bull might come in. And as you talk to, like, Shannon Mobs, when you get inside on a bull like that, if they have cows, they're protective, so they'll come in. But he was by himself, so he was just waiting for me to come up to him to fight. Like, he wasn't going to come in. And so I was like, okay. So I let off one last bugle, and then I throw my bugle tube down because I wanted to be ready. And take about 5 or 6 steps, and then I step in this like 3-foot ditch and fall flat on my face.
Oh no.
Yeah. And I, like, so I was, part of me is embarrassed, and the other part of me is like, crap, like, I'm 35-40 yards from this giant bull, and here I am making a bunch of commotion falling on the ground.
That could have been a good thing though, right? Who knows?
Yeah, that bull has, he thinks I'm an elk, and so it worked out well.
Yeah.
They didn't spook him or anything. So I get back up. I kind of look back at Selmer and smile, and he's like just cracking up because I just fell on my face. And I'm like, okay, shake it off, get my game face on, sneak up to about 25 yards or so, and I'm peeking through this bush, and he's raking a tree. And I sat there for about 15 minutes, and he was just bending this little poor little fir tree to the ground, just tearing it up. And now I don't have my bugle tube, so I'm still bugling, thinking he might come out and step in front of me. So I probably sound like just this wimpy little spike. And he would stop raking the tree, scream at me, and then go right back to raking the tree. And I thought about stepping out and shooting him there, but I didn't know. All I could see was his head. So I didn't know if his vitals were exposed or if there'd be brush in the way. In hindsight, it was wide open, so I probably could have stepped out and shot, but I didn't want to risk it. So after about 15 minutes, he stopped raking the tree and stepped back. And so I bugled again, and he bugled back, and I said, okay, this is it. So I came to full draw, and I took about 3 or 4 steps out and got enough of a shooting lane. But then I'm staring right at his butt. He was facing away from me, but he was turned back looking at me. We locked eyes, and my initial thought was, uh-oh, like, I don't have a clear shot. And then, of course, the Texas heart shot popped in my head, but I was like, no, I don't have the balls to take it.
Right.
Yeah. And so he turns his head, and then he takes a step, and he's about to walk off into the sunset, but he opened up just enough of an angle that I could put it in, quartered away, So I smoked him at 23 yards.
Wow.
Awesome.
Man.
Yeah, it was a tight shot, but it was cool. Everything just kind of fell into place, and I just felt calm and collective. And then I freaked out as soon as I shot. Like, I shot, he takes off, and I was like, holy cow, like, did that just happen? I was like, I think it was a good shot. My arrow disappeared, but, like, I don't know, because I mean, the uncertainty until you find him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had too many bad experiences.
So did that kind of quarter in up towards that opposing shoulder?
Yeah. So it went in. He was walking, so it hit a little further back than I was aiming. But it went in right at the front of his back leg and up into it, and it stuck right in his brisket. So it didn't hit the other shoulder, but, yeah, it stuck right in his chest.
Ooh, and those guys don't tend to bleed very quick either, so that's probably a little scary.
Yeah, it was. But as soon as Selmer came up to me, I was excited, and I was talking to the camera. But we don't have any audio from the hunt because the camera got water in the battery compartment. And so that's why there's just music when I put it to a video on YouTube. But so I'm talking to the camera. I'm like, yeah, we're going to wait for a half hour. Like, I think I hit him good, but we won't have any blood. And then I think 5 minutes later, I was like, forget it. Let's go look. getting back to earlier, I'd had that mountain house, and because I was like, man, I need to get some energy. So right after I shot the bull, I was like, I better drink some water because it is going to be a long night. So I drink a half of Nalgene real quick. And then instantly I started feeling really sick. And I was like, oh, Selmer, I don't feel good. He's like, yeah, it's just you drilling. I was like, no. And then about that time I started throwing up. And so it was probably a mix of mountain house, which I haven't had one since, and I don't think I'm ever going to have one again.
Yeah.
That's probably good.
Yeah, I was like, this is horrible. So Selmer was just, he's cracking up. And I'm sitting there ralphing all over the ground. Yeah, so wiped my mouth, and I was like, okay, let's go find the bull. I got that out of the way, all the anxiousness and the nerves and stuff. We walked up to the tree, got a good look at where I shot him, and I had told someone, I said, hey, he's not going to bleed because of where I hit him. It's mid-body, and it's far back, so he's going to have to fill up before he bleeds. It'll take a while. And so we just started gridding real quick because I thought I had heard him crash, and sure enough, about we gridded two different spots, and about 5 minutes later, I walk around the corner, and there he was, piled up.
Oh my gosh!
Wow, that's great.
From where we shot.
Yes.
Yeah. So, it was cool.
That's so awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. Man,
is it September yet?
I know, right? Jeez, you can't even. So
yeah, no.
Being a that's an awesome story. Congratulations, by the way. It's kind of how we all want it to go, other than the throwing up. But that makes the story better.
Yeah. And it's my first branch bull, so I was really blessed with that.
Yeah.
I only shot spikes, so that's pretty cool.
So being back in there, you guys are on mountain bikes. You know, it's our job to always refocus on fitness, right? That's what we do, what we've been doing for a long time. And so, you know, that being said, you guys have the resource of mountain bikes, which is huge, you know, covering all this ground.
Yeah.
Still, it's work, right?
Yeah.
When you and I were talking, when we were doing our deep, deep country turkey hunt, you'd said that you were on kind of starting to go down that road and you'd lost 17 or so pounds so far with it, right?
Yeah.
And how do you think that plays a factor or a role in hunting, especially the kind of hunting that we do out here in these, you know, in the Western states?
Yeah. Well, it makes a huge difference. So I've struggled with being heavy for most of my life. And in high school, I was always doing sports. So I was always working out, wrestling, football. Even in track, we were always running and doing exercises and stuff. So I maintained weight pretty good. And then I got to college and I put on probably 30 or 40 pounds, like real quick. And that was the first time I really battled with it. But then I lost all that weight and got down to about 220. This is the long answer to that question.
Hey,
yeah, good.
Bring it on.
Then after college, after I started dating Katie, so my junior year, I started gaining some weight back, but I didn't get too heavy. Then my senior year, I started working at Schwab's, and I got up to about 270. But I had maintained there. My diet was crap, but we were running so much for work that I could do whatever I wanted, and I'd stay right about that 265, 270 mark. But then I got a job in the school district, and I didn't change any of my habits, my eating habits, so I put on a lot more weight. And so back in December or so, I found myself sitting about 318, and I was like, dang, this sucks. So I've been trying off and on. Like I said, I was down about 18 pounds, but I still haven't had the gumption to get after it and make that change until yesterday. I was talking to Corey Ford about it just last night, but I called a buddy yesterday and he was like, I was like, hey, long time no talk. How you been? You want to hang out? He's like, well, I'm going to the doctor. And I said, well, what's going on? He's like, I have diabetes.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah. And I was like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, whoa. And I got checked up just a couple months ago, and for the most part, everything's fine and I'm healthy, but I'm significantly heavy from where I used to be and where I should be.
How old is your friend?
He is, I think he's 27. 27. Something like that.
Yeah.
He's only a couple of years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was like, whoa. So I looked down and I had my Dutch Bros in my cup holder. And I pulled over into a parking lot and threw it in the garbage. And they're like, this is it. So like last night, that's crazy. That was my like reality check. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, I've been trying to lose some weight and I've been doing okay, but I'm going to get after it and really make that difference.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's so incredible. I guess to answer your question, how does it make a difference? This weekend at the Northwest Mountain Challenge, I was doing fine. I was hiking all the stuff and getting through all the courses. But at the end of the day, I was just beat up. And I'm carrying a lot of extra weight that I don't need to be carrying. And it took a huge toll just this last weekend. And so if you want to be successful, you can be fat and kill bulls, like I proved that last year. But it's a lot harder than if I shed 60 or 70 pounds. Because that 70 pounds that I shed is what I'll be packing on my back anyways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Save that weight for the pack out.
It makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I'll also guarantee the fact that you get to hunt for the rest of your life and you'll be around for your family to provide for them to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Awesome. How long have you been an archer? How long have you been archery hunting?
I've been archery hunting since I was 17.
Okay.
And I've been shooting a bow since I was a kid. My dad, he's always shot traditional. So I'd shoot the recurve as a kid, but he never pushed me to get into it.
Yeah.
I started deer hunting when I was 11. And then he kind of just let me find it on my own. So when I was 17, I was like, Dad, I want you to buy me a bow. Well, I was 16. And then he bought me one for my birthday. So yeah, it's been a few years.
That's awesome. That's great. What are your plans for this year? What kind of goals do you have?
Oregon will just be general over-the-counter stuff. My dad and I were hoping to go to Idaho for a mule deer hunt. We're still trying to get the details worked out, see if you can get time off. And that would be probably an October rifle hunt.
Okay.
I've never had a mule deer, so that's like what I'm most excited for, just to spend that time with my pops. Once I moved away, we haven't got to hunt together much.
Yeah.
Growing up in high school, that's what we do. After football practice, we'd run up on the hill and hunt for an hour or two before dark.
Yeah, sure.
So looking forward to that. And then just the other day, I was talking to Tyler Crockett, and we were just talking about stories. And he gave me I really sat down after talking with him. I was like, what kind of stories do I want to tell this year? And so I talked to my strength coach. His name's Mike Lovely. And I've been talking to him for a couple of years about getting him out, taking him deer hunting. And then I was like, hey, Mike, like, let's make it happen. So he's got his son, Isaiah, is, I believe he'll be going into the seventh grade this next year. So they've never hunted. So we're going to start this summer. I'm going to get him into some hunter safety courses. And we're going to take him blacktail hunting in October.
Awesome. So
film everything from start to finish and teach them how to shoot guns and the safety aspect and just make sure they become proficient.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we can get out there and get some blacktails this October.
Well, that's fun. So you're going to take them on a rifle hunt? Because if you're taking him on an archery, his first hunt for blacktails and archery, he's never going to want to hunt again.
No, we're rifle hunting.
Okay,
and that way I can guarantee that I won't be selfish because I won't have a tag in my pocket.
Yeah. So good. What part of Idaho are you guys thinking about going to?
Salmon River area. I think Unit 27, and then Unit 21. We're going to be kind of right on those borders. So my dad, he's hunted it probably 10, 12 years ago, and had some success, but he hasn't been back. So he's like, you know, let's go for it. So I've never been. So I have no idea what we're getting into, but I've heard things about it.
Some good topography there.
Yeah.
So, did you have any more questions or?
I was just going to ask you, you know, kind of looking back and maybe being through different experiences in your life where you're a little bit heavier, a little bit more fit, like what advice would you give from that perspective to somebody who's maybe on the fence with, you know, thinking or, you know, evaluating, making changes, but not quite sure. You know, is there enough value in it to give up the things that keep us comfortable? What advice would you give to somebody like that?
Yeah, I try and find somebody that can motivate you. That's my mental game has been what's kept me from doing it. And like I talked to Corey yesterday and he's like, don't give yourself excuses. You are the only person that knows what's best for you and you're the only person that can do it. So when I'm sitting in line at Dutch Bros, he's like, don't tell yourself it's just one more time. He's like, give it up right now. Just quit.
Right.
And that's way easier said than done for most people.
Yeah.
And for me, it like my mental game, and I've always struggled with it. Like, oh, you know, I need to lose some weight, but I'll start next week or I'll start tomorrow. And then it's always one more. And pretty soon it's 4 months later and I still haven't made those changes. So just trying to dig down inside and find that motivation. For me, that's key. And I think for a lot of people, just don't give yourself an excuse. Because you're going to call your buddy and find out he has diabetes and you guys are real similar in build. And you're going to wonder why you haven't made those changes sooner.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us, you know, health is one of those areas where, you know, people can be really reluctant to make changes or find excuses or put it off until, you know, the start of the month or next Monday or something like that until we come face to face with, you know, a lot of times it's our own diagnosis of things going wrong or diabetes or, you know, hypertension or, you know, we have actual events that cause us to, you know, slow down. And then we go, okay, maybe I should evaluate where I am right now. So, you know, I think if we can, you know, look around and, you know, have a really clear realization of those things, you know, for you, it was your friend, but, you know, thankfully, and not, you know, that it's somebody else's problem, but thankfully it wasn't your own. So you get to use somebody else's situation to motivate you a little bit more. You know, I think that's great, especially, you know, for our families. And Stephen and I talk quite a bit about, you know, it's my responsibility to make sure that when I go in and go on a hunt with Stephen, that I'm not putting him at risk if I can't do my job and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that there's definitely, you know, a safety aspect in that, just making sure that you're capable because, I mean, we never know what scenarios are going to come up when we get back there and the majority of the time we're a really long ways from, you know, from a route out, you know, that isn't dependent on our own 2 feet. So that's awesome. I think that's great advice. You know, no excuse kind of attitude gets people a lot more places for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, getting to know you better, having a lot of the same peer group, in person, extended, all that kind of stuff. Seeing you bust your butt this weekend at the Northwest Mountain Challenge, being bright red, and that's the Rosie that I was thinking of, you know, being happy with it. I think the only part of that entire game that most folks, especially driven folks like yourself, if you weren't driven, you wouldn't be doing the master's program that you're doing and giving and being a voice and an advocate for these kids and all that kind of stuff. And I know we haven't said anything about it to you, and I know you and I haven't spoken about it, but I would be more than happy to get you ready on me for your Idaho hunt. So basically you got, you know, 3 months or less. We can work. We're only, 45 minutes drive apart from each other. We can meet up, you know, a couple times a month and get you set up on the online program. And I think that you're going to be family for life. I think that you're a fantastic dude. I've never met anybody who has anything bad to say about you. If they did, I wouldn't trust them anyway, right? So I think that right now, you know, if I'm sure Courtney would agree, you know, we've got almost 30 years experience combined of doing this. And the number one thing that the people that seek us out and work with us say, I need to be accountable to somebody.
Yeah. Accountability is huge. You know, if nobody knows that you're going to fail, a lot of times we just go, oh, okay, whatever, you know, or people get into a pattern where they feel like they're not successful. So it's almost expected, you know, but when somebody else is reliant and you're reliant on them to be accountable, to stay true to the goals, to stick with your plan, to make it to the gym, whatever that is, when somebody else knows about it, you have a much harder time not making it happen or falling off the wagon, you know, or throwing in the towel, because nobody wants to fail in front of somebody else.
Right.
You know, so if we can voice those things to somebody else and have that accountability, it makes our success a lot higher.
Yeah. And I think, in my opinion, I think the biggest failure is not having the ability to reach out and say, I don't feel it today.
Right.
You fail yourself when you can't reach out for help. And a lot of us do that. You know what I mean? And I don't mean you, I just mean in general, even to the point where I've been sitting in the parking lot of the gym, you know, and as much as we've been doing with a lot of our functional training, and probably 60 to 80% of our clients don't even go to the gym. They work out at home, right? It's functional. We're hunters. We find ways to do that kind of stuff. And I've been sitting in the gym, and I'll call her and be like, I need you. I need you to get me inside. I don't want to be here. Right. So I think the biggest failure nowadays in health, fitness, and that motivating factor is not being able to go, hey, I need you to kick me in the ass today and say, hey, or find a way to get to my level and motivate me to move or to this or to that or fill in the blank. Right. So, I'd love to be that person, dude. I'd be more than happy to jump on the Golden Rosie bandwagon and to help you set and reach whatever goals it is that you need to do and get you going. And you're going to have to be physically healthy to be able to help with people's mental health. So,
For sure. Yeah. You gotta walk the walk. You can't just talk the talk.
Right.
Amen.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
If you're willing, I know I kind of threw you on the spot here in front of the millions and millions of people that are going to listen to this podcast.
Yeah. No, that'd be awesome. I really appreciate that.
Well, we love seeing what you're doing, Jack, and you're authenticity has always really inspired me. There's a lot of people everywhere that, you know, just kind of show what should be shown or what people want to see. But I just love that you always bring who Jack is to the table. Yeah. I really admire that about you.
Me too.
So glad that we could pin you down and have you on the show. Last weekend at the Northwest Mountain Challenge, it was kind of a little bit of like things going everywhere, but it was great to see you up there and just connect with everybody. It was a lot of fun.
I didn't see you before that big bear hug, right? We were just kind of starting to set up. And not a lot of people, not that I'm the largest man in the world, but not a lot of people can just come up and grab a hold of me from behind. And I don't see them come and pick me up and I'm rendered useless, right? I've kind of actually prepared for a large portion of my life to defend against that, but you got me. So
I surprised you.
Yeah,
I didn't get punched in the face.
No way. I looked down and saw the arm freckles and was like, there's only one guy that could pull that off.
That's awesome.
Dude, well, if there's anything you want to add, if there's anything you're working on, if there's any, you know, we're not afraid of a good personal plug, anything you've got going on, you know, let us know about it. Anything you want to add to this today? We're not really big on editing things out or, you know what I mean? We like to wing it, which is why I didn't send you any questions or anything like that. Yeah. Not downplaying anybody that has a podcast or any kind of show that likes to prep their people. But, you know, I don't see a lot of editing happening in our future just because we like things to be raw and real and that kind of stuff. Usually we're getting video bombed by our cat. So it's been pretty solid today.
Yeah. It's been pretty chill.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to thank you guys for doing what you're doing. I found you guys just on social media a few years back. Well, it was probably a year or two ago. And I just started kind of watching what you're doing. And I was like, man, these guys are pretty motivating. And like you said, you guys are very authentic and real. And you're, from what I can tell, your goals are just to help people make themselves better. And that's the biggest thing I've learned in counseling is I'm not giving my advice. I'm helping somebody dig deep down inside of themselves to find the answer to their own problems. So they're finding their own answers. They just need some guidance along the way. And that's what you guys are doing for others. You're motivating them. You're helping them find the willpower and the strength to take that extra step and to make sure they go to the gym or do whatever they got to do to get healthy, whether that's putting on muscle or losing fat. Like, you guys are doing the same thing for others. So I've really appreciated you guys and everything you've done. And I'm stoked that we've got to hang out over the last couple of months and kind of start to grow that friendship.
Heck yeah. Awesome. Man,
well,
me too.
We appreciate hearing that very much. And, you know, I think we're all just kind of doing our part in the way that we're good at, you know, for everybody that's different. And, you know, we enjoy being in this journey with you. And, if people want to watch that story, it might be music only with the bull at the end, but where will they find that on YouTube?
So it's just a Golden Rosie Outdoors.
Okay.
I've got an Instagram page. You can usually click on a link there and that'll take you to my YouTube channel.
Awesome.
Or just click it up on YouTube. And I've got a few videos on there. They're slowly getting better and better. That's the other thing, starting to film all my stuff, like from my first blacktail hunt. That's probably about as raw as it gets, shaky and not well put together. But as every video I've learned, I learned so much more. And thanks to my buddy Nick, he's taught me a lot about filming and editing. So that's what I'm most excited for about this year is just getting good content and putting together some quality stories.
Awesome.
Perfect. Sounds great. Yeah. Well, thanks again for being on the show. We enjoyed having you.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to put a link actually to your page, if you don't mind, in the show notes.
Even if you do mind.
Gotcha. And even if you do mind, it doesn't matter. So, and you can, where can you find us?
You can find us online. We are elevationfitnesstraining.com. We also have an Instagram page at Elevation Fitness Training. We love to answer questions. So if you have questions, comments, a topic that you want us to talk about, feel free to please leave a comment below. Like, subscribe, share it with your friends, spam everybody you know.
That's right.
We like the attention. We like to answer your questions. I think that covers it. Thanks for tuning in to Archery Maniacs. We'll check you out next time.
That's right. We'll try to add a link also to the Jack Lander Turkey Calling School of Arts and Cattle as well. So
yeah.
Thanks again for joining us today, buddy.
Of course. Thank you. I'll throw up how to call on big black bells too.
Perfect. Sounds good, man. Thanks so much for being on today, buddy.
You bet. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you for tuning in to the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.